The family of a resident at a HSE-run facility has asked that another resident be moved from the premises following two safeguarding incidents that occurred in a nine-year period. The incidents involved a male resident who had an acquired brain injury, kissing and touching the breast of another resident who is immobile. An unpublished review into the care and management of the female resident by the health service executive has found there was a failure to implement safeguarding measures at the facility. Our social affairs correspondent Alva Keneally has seen the report into that review. But first, let's hear from Majella Beattie, national spokesperson of the campaign group Care Champions, who has spoken to the family involved. She spoke to reporter Kieran Dineen last night.
The family of this lady are very much traumatised. They very much talk about their daughter being unable to protect herself and relying on others for all her care. It is very difficult for them to live with the fact that their daughter has been harmed twice by the same person. They are very much aware that resident B also has a disability and is also entitled to the support that he needs, but they do not believe that their daughter should have to live in the same home as the person who has harmed her.
And is this family concerned today about what might happen to their daughter?
This family want resident B to be removed so that their daughter can live safely in her home. The problem is the ongoing trauma to this young lady, because she is so vulnerable and has no way to protect herself. This young man with his disability, she will hear him, she will see him, and they don't want her to be re-traumatised.
And that's Majella Beattie of Care Champions. Now, to talk us through the story, I'm joined by our social affairs correspondent, Alva Keneally. Give us the background to this, Alva, please.
Yeah, a very distressing report. So this review centres around two residents in a long-term care facility, and they're called Resident A and Resident B in the report. Now, Resident A was admitted to the facility in 2013. She's immobile, she's non-verbal, but she can make eye contact or moaning sounds if she's in pain or distress. She can smile, she can laugh, she can turn her head and she can see. She's now in her 30s and she's significantly supported by her family. And Resident B then has an acquired brain injury and he is mobile. So what happened was, in June last year, while Resident A was in the lounge area of the facility watching TV, Resident B went into the room, put his hand down the woman's top and felt her left breast. Now, a staff member witnessed this and immediately told Resident B to stop. Resident B removed his hand and walked away. Both families of Resident A and B were informed of the incident, as were the Gardaí. A Garda specialist team attended a week later to complete an assessment of the victim. HICWA was informed, a commissioner to head up this review was brought in, and the safeguarding and protection team was notified.
But this is not the first time that this had happened.
No. There had been a previous incident back in 2014 when Resident B kissed Resident A and again touched her breast. That 2014 incident resulted in a report by a consultant clinical neuropsychologist and a clinical psychologist at the time. And they said that due to Resident A's disability, reduced inhibition and communication problems, she'd be very vulnerable to inappropriate advances from male residents who suffered from acquired brain injury with impaired cognitive function and executive dysfunction. So that report made recommendations to prevent the risk of a similar safeguarding issue happening again.
So what kind of measures were put in place?
So there was a risk assessment and a care plan put in place in 2014. An alarm was also installed in Resident A's room to alert staff if someone entered her room. But there was an assumption by staff and management that the sensor beams in the room were always activated when she was alone in a room. But other staff told this review team that it was only activated at night because there were staff around during the day. So there appears to be confusion around this. But this latest review, it established that there were long periods where Resident A was returned to her room for the night at around 4 or 4:30 in the evening, and the sensor beams weren't activated, and this was a concern for the family.
So when you consider the introduction of these measures that you've outlined, how did the incident happen again a second time?
Yeah, well, it appears that information regarding the first incident. It simply wasn't passed on or communicated over the years. The review team found that the risk assessment and care plan put in place in 2014, that's after the first incident, it hadn't been considered or updated since December 2018. Now, that'd be unusual because really, in these settings, those risk assessments would normally be reviewed, they should be reviewed every couple of months. So the vulnerability of this woman, that would have been evident from a risk assessment, and it seems to have gone off the radar because no staff member could recall safeguarding plans being discussed or that they were informed of the 2014 incident when they were asked by this review team. And of the limited number of staff that were aware of what happened in 2014, they believed the risk no longer featured because Resident B's history of risk was associated with alcohol and this was no longer a factor. But all the staff interviewed stated that at no point did they consider Resident B, and I quote here from the report, to be a risk of sexually assaulting any resident in the unit.
And the parents of the victims then, do they want Resident B moved? What do they want?
Yeah, well, you know, you heard from Magella Beatty there of Care Champions who've been dealing with the parents and residents A's parents. They acknowledged that both residents were vulnerable due to their conditions. However, they told the review team that they noticed a change in their daughter's presentation before the latest incident last year. And they felt that she'd been trying to communicate something to them for a time. And while the report says it can't categorically identify the reasoning for this change in behaviour, the family said their daughter has been more relaxed since Resident B has been moved. He's been moved location within the same unit, though. So they believe for her safety, he should be removed from the facility altogether.
So what's the HSE been saying by way of response to this report into the review?
So the HSE has apologised to the residents affected by the incident, which it said it shouldn't have happened. It pointed out that they met with the family of those involved to apologise. It has repeated that apology today. It added that when it takes, that it does take complaints and incidents of this nature very seriously, and as well as the review being conducted that we're just talking about, appropriate safeguarding plans were immediately put in place. It said it would engage further with the individuals involved, their advocates and their families on recommendations contained in the report. But I did ask, was it considering moving Resident B from the facility? It didn't respond to that question.
All right, Alva Keneally, thank you very much for bringing us the details of that story. And we're staying with it. I'm joined by the Minister of State for Children, Disability, Integration and Youth, Anne Rabbiton. A very good morning to you, Minister.
Good morning, Marian. Thank you for having me.
How long have you known about events in this care home that Alva has outlined to us?
I'm hearing it for the first time there this morning, Mary. I heard it on your 7 o'clock news. I'm hearing about it for the first time. I heard that the documentary there that Alva has presented for the first time, Mary.
Why are you hearing it for the first time? Should you not, as the line minister, been aware?
And I'm disappointed that I didn't hear about it before this. And needless to say that there's an email already being sent to the HSE for an update as to exactly what has happened and to why I wasn't aware of it. And I will deal with that throughout the course of the day. But for the family listening in, I have no doubt that this is very distressing and very traumatic. But there's two people with disabilities here that equally require support, Mary. It's very important to say that as well. And sometimes when we hear stories like this, and it's not the first time we've heard stories like this, we've heard numerous stories like that. And that's why that when Bernard Gloucester came into office in 2023, he put safeguarding as one of his main priorities. And that's why McIlroy would have worked on safeguarding and published a report just there in June 2024. And it's all about the culture, Mary.
Yeah, but as Alva told us there, there was an incident in 2014. There were safeguarding measures put in place. But the staff don't seem to have been in the loop, and there was no update or upgrading, which should have happened on a regular basis, and nothing at all since 2018.
Absolutely, and that is one of the questions I'll be asking as to why events and such intrusion on a person who has been assaulted, why that does not stay on the record, why it is not identified, why would staff change, is that key to Passover not taking place, and why is it not part of the multidisciplinary monthly, quarterly meetings that would be taking place? And also, the most important thing here is it's about compatibility. Like, clearly, the individual who is identified as A is nonverbal and immobile and is at a very vulnerable state, who has only seems to have only inspections every 2 hours to ensure that she's safe and well. And this idea about lasers in rooms, like, it just feels like there's a complete failure or breakdown.
It's about more than that. It's about not implementing the measures that were put in place. And when you think about it, Minister, we've had the Brandon case, we've had the Emily case, we've had the Law Reform Commission saying new legislation was needed. They called for a safeguarding body. Now, what steps have you taken to ensure that all of the reports and all of the recommendations that were made have been not just taken on board, but implemented?
So when you talk about the Brandon report there, or the Brandon case, Mary, so I've put in place an independent expert who is due to come back to me in the coming weeks in relation to the findings of it.
So hold on a minute on that. And the Brandon report, that was back in 2021, wasn't it? And at the time, one of the recommendations was that strategic working group you're talking about. This is 2024.
So let's be very clear here, Mary, that the Brandon report was a HSE document which I had not full visibility of. It was a NERP, and I hadn't an understanding or clear visibility that all the reviews and all the recommendations were fully carried out. That's why I put in place to ensure that there would be all the recommendations that were there were implemented. I went and I visited the centre itself, met with the families, met with the staff to ensure that actually when I do get a report, it is being actioned. And whatever findings we can find from that report, we could also use across other care settings. You talked about the Emily report there, and that's where Jackie McElroy was tasked with actually doing a complete review in relation to the Emily case, but also on a wider piece of that. She also a review or a publication was done in June 2024, where she talks about the culture, the safeguarding, the strong need for embedded safeguarding.
We have all the reports. We have all the recommendations. People seem to be able to define the problem. We just don't seem to be able to implement the solutions.
I think, to be fair, Mary, here, defining the problem is one thing, but it's also ensuring that there is a safeguarding culture, that there's increasing visibility and understanding of safeguarding in the care process, where people are in the care of the state. So as staff come and staff go, it's very having it similar to when you have an inspection for HICWA, ensuring that safeguarding is front and centre at all times. And it's important to acknowledge what Majella Beattie said here, and really is an important piece. The re-traumatising, where a person who is non-verbal can hear a voice down the corridor, and that's what I want to prevent and work with Bernard Lost.
Minister Rabbit, thank you very much, Minister Anne Rabbit.